everyone, and welcome in to another episode of That's What B Said. Special post-game episode, Game 1 against the Chiefs recap coming at you guys on a Tuesday morning. I'm your host, Bree, at Breezy Clee, and tonight I'm joined by Miss Meredith at MCAN Sports. Hello, Meredith.
Hello, Bree.
Well, not the episode we really wanted to open up with as our first post-game podcast. However, we are here, as we always are. We are ready to talk about it. But first, before we get started with all things recapping the game, I wanted to thank everyone for coming out to the event that we had on Sunday before the game. I actually couldn't make it, ended up not being able to go last minute. My allergies were acting up, had a runny nose, really bad headache, didn't want to risk things and be around a bunch of people. So I bowed out, but I know Meredith, you were there to make it after your work day. And Brittany talked about how good of a time it was. Lots of giveaways, lots of drinks flowing, lots of friends and Browns fans alike, and almost $300 raised for Providence House, which is amazing news.
Yeah, it was a great event. We got to meet a lot of really fun people. A few friends of the show stopped by. John Doss from Channel 5 stopped by. A few other people, you know, some friends of ours that were helping us out with the event. So obviously, you know, Jenna was representing with Beleza in Style, which if you don't know, Beleza in Style does all of our merchandise. And Jenna is working on getting her shop back open. She had to close it down for a little bit because of her moving. But now that she's moved, she's getting settled. And once she's settled, her shop is going to open back up. So if you want to buy That's What B Said merchandise, that's where you can go get it. Once her shop is opened up, we'll give you guys all the details. But the event was so much fun. So many people came out. It was a gorgeous day. Lots of fun.
It really was a nice day.
And the game was fun for about 2.5 quarters. So
yeah, we're going to have to get into that, aren't we?
So if we met you on Sunday, it was awesome to meet you. Thank you guys so much for coming out. We're hoping that we can do more events like that in the future because we love hanging out with you guys, especially on Brown Sundays.
Yes, I hope that I can make one eventually as well. But I'm hoping that I am able to go to the home opener on Sunday. So if you see me there, give me a holler. Hopefully we're celebrating a victory at home. But yeah, not going to lie, Meredith, I do have a little bit. We were talking about this right before we recorded. I have a little bit of anxiety about getting back together with a large group of people. I mean, I love everyone. Yeah. But, you know, with the Delta variant spreading, fully vaxxed. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything. I feel safe, but kind of exposed again.
Well, the one nice thing with First Energy is that it is outside. So you do have that free flowing air. I don't know what First Energy's mask policies are at the moment. But they don't worry, they'll announce all that. But, you know, I think when it comes down to it, if, you know, if you're nervous, you know, you have to do what's best for you and you have to do what, you know, you need to do to, you know, keep yourself safe and your loved ones safe. But, you know, I hope to see you there.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right. Well, shall we recap the game on Sunday? So everyone knows at this point in time. I mean, it's been, what, a full day and a half of groveling here. Our Cleveland Browns fell to the Kansas City Chiefs 33-29 after having the lead for pretty much the entire game except for the last 7 minutes. So very tough pill to swallow. And it's been a frustrating day and a half on the interwebs. Per usual, Browns Twitter is not safe. Do not recommend going on Browns Twitter for any type of uplifting or positive experience. It is not that. Run far, far away.
Well, you want to know what's so funny? I did go on Reddit today. I did not go on Twitter at all today.
I love that you did that.
Well, okay, I lied. I went on Twitter from my professional account just to keep up with the news and to tweet stuff about work. But I was not on my personal account for like a single second at all today. But I did go to Reddit, and we can talk about Rival Reddit later in the show if we want to. But the Browns Reddit was surprisingly positive. It was Browns Reddit, when I checked it around, I don't know, 9:30 this morning, is what I feel like Browns Twitter wants to be, where it was,
yes,
where it was, here's a really cool highlight of what happened, of something that happened yesterday. Like, here's like that, it's this great catch from Anthony Schwartz. Here's this trick play that Kevin Stefanski really, ran at the end of the first half. Like, they had stuff like that, and then people were commenting on it. And then there were a few posts of like, disappointed, but it's week one. We didn't expect it. Like, Browns Reddit was incredible today. So I feel like Browns Twitter needs to maybe take a few notes. Like, take a few notes from what you saw on Browns Reddit, because it was overwhelmingly informative and positive today. Now, granted, it may have gone to shit later because I checked it in the morning and haven't checked it since. But as of like 9:30 this morning, it was a great place to be.
No, I think you're right at that. I do feel like the Browns Reddit board is generally pretty positive. The only place that it can get a little bit sketchy is during like the live game
Oh yeah, like those
threads,
live
which you
comment
obviously wouldn't be
threads.
a part of. Yeah, but again, that's like you're like watching and reacting in real time. I feel like that's pretty normal to
I
have
can't keep
negativity
up
on
with
there.
those. Like, I can't keep up with
Yeah, it's
those
really
live
hard. It
reaction
really.
because I tried once. So this is no secret. I am a diehard obsessive fan of the show The Challenge on MTV, which is a reality competition show. And I that's another like that's probably one of the Reddit pages I visit very frequently, and they do have live reaction threads for the episodes when they air. And I tried to follow along once, I just couldn't do it. I was so lost. I was like, I have no idea who is responding to who. Like, what are they referring to? Someone's obviously on a delay because now they're making a comment on a fight that happened 10 minutes ago in the episode. I have no idea what's going on. So I can't keep up with those live discussion Reddit boards. They are a mess.
Yes, it's aggressive. But we'll get into it in a little bit. I think we all know the discussion in Rival Reddit. A lot of it was centered around our team and not their team, which I have some thoughts that we will get into. But Meredith, one of the things, so this is going to probably sound silly, but I was disappointed that the Browns lost, but it didn't feel like a disappointing loss, if that makes sense. Does that make
So
sense? Or does that is
that
that
does
just
make
weird?
No, that absolutely makes sense because I was trying to articulate last night how I felt about this loss, and I did an okay job. And then Ken Carmen actually, I think, encapsulated it perfectly this morning. He said there were points in the show, or in the show, in the game that were upsetting, but overall it was not an upsetting game. So you can pick out points, and we're going to talk about all of them. But there were individual performances, individual plays, and individual instances that in the moment made me very mad to see. But when you look at the forest for the trees, like when you look at this game from kickoff to the last second, it was an overwhelmingly positive game for the Browns. I mean, that offense in the first half of the game was just like, my pants are still on fire. It was so good. Like, it's like, I was so impressed. I was thrilled that we got not one but two trick plays from Kevin Stefanski. Like, the Browns just absolutely dominated that first half. And I think if the last 7 minutes of the game went differently, even if it was, even if it still resulted in a loss, I don't think that people would be so like, the sky is falling today. I think the fact that the majority of the mental errors and the just the mental collapses, because they happened in such a short period of time and happened towards the end, people are kind of like in this prisoner of the moment type thing. It's like, okay, yeah, like we don't like that Jamie Gillen fumbled. We don't like that Nick Chubb fumbled. We don't like that John Johnson missed a tackle. Like, we don't like that Baker Mayfield threw an interception on the Browns' last drive. We don't like any of that, no. But that doesn't erase what happened in the first half of the game. Well,
Yes.
on the scoreboard it does, but
Yes,
in
exactly. I
terms
was like, it
of,
kind of does, but yeah, I get what
oh,
you're saying.
yeah. I was trying to say in terms of, like it doesn't take away from the way the Browns played in the first half. And I've got so many thoughts on all of it, but
Yeah, we'll get
we'll get
into
to
it
them.
because what I was frustrated about the most is the narrative coming out of the game from fans, media. It's so annoying. And other fan bases is the whole the same old Browns. Like the Browns did something Browns. It's lazy.
Yes.
The way that I looked at it last night was it took a fumble, a miffed punt, and an interception for the best quarterback right now and offense in the National Football League to beat the Cleveland Browns. Period. End of story. The Kansas City Chiefs, the only thing that they were better at in the game on Sunday, they were mistake-free. And when you have a team that, I'm going to say this is going to probably sound weird, but they were equals to us, right? It was a pretty even game. Sometimes that's all it takes to win. And that is what it all boiled down to. The Cleveland Browns needed to play mistake-free, and they couldn't.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, because you cannot give Kansas City an inch, because if you give them an inch, they're going to get 10 miles. And that's exactly what
Yeah.
happened. You know, it's like
Yes.
there's a tiny little rip in the paper and Patrick Mahomes tore it in half. So that really is what it came down to. The one thing that really got on my nerves today in terms of the narratives, and I saw this while I was unfortunately on Twitter when I had to be, but every like generic professional NFL account, like NFL on
Yep.
Fox, NFL on ESPN, like every single one of them was some storyline about the Browns losing their season opener. Like, oh, the Browns are
Yes.
now this many years. Like, oh, the Browns have to wait another year to try and break this streak. And I'm like, who effing cares? Like, who
I
cares?
totally agree.
Because, you know, when we were going into this game, and we even said this last week, it was one of those things where the Browns have the ability to win, but we weren't going to. And a lot of people are going back on that, but we're not going to cry about a loss in week one if it's not a bad loss. Because really, it was so different than their loss to the Ravens last year. Like, their loss to the Ravens last year, that one had everyone saying same old Browns, and you know, and that was the first we had seen of Kevin Stefanski, because there was no
Yes.
preseason last year. So that first game against the Ravens was the litmus test for Kevin Stefanski, and everyone thought that he failed.
Yes,
So
agreed.
yeah, so going into this game, we all were preparing mentally and emotionally for a loss, because the Chiefs were coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, you know? So it's not like the Browns were going in and facing an easy team. They're
No one
facing one
expected
of
the
the
Browns to
best,
win.
yeah, they're facing one of
I
the
mean, let's
absolute
be real.
best teams in the league.
Outside of a portion of the Browns fan base, nobody expected and maybe a couple of national media members. I did see a couple of
Yeah.
people that actually picked the Browns to win, but for the most part, the Browns were underdogs going in. They weren't favored to win. They were expected to lose this game. So
Right. And so then
the
every Twitter
fact,
account that's like, oh, the Browns lost week one again, shut
yes,
up.
like you didn't need to get that ready. In fact, at halftime, you would have thought this was going to be one of the biggest shocks in week one in the NFL, right? Everyone was kind of
Yeah.
like sitting there on pins and needles. And now I know you can't count Patrick Mahomes out. Like, there's no lead that is too padded when you're playing against Patrick
Right.
Mahomes and that
I mean,
offense.
yeah, you could be
But
ahead by 50, and if you make one mistake, Kansas City's going to come back on
exactly.
you.
And what I think is probably the most frustrating thing coming out of that game is that the Browns, in my opinion, if they would have played that same exact game, inclusive of the fumble, inclusive of the punt miss, inclusive of the Baker interception, I actually still think they could have beat probably 30 out of the 32 football teams in the National Football League, even playing the way that
Oh,
they played
yeah.
yesterday. They still could have beat another team with those mistakes. It's just the Chiefs that you cannot afford to make those mistakes against. You can't.
Exactly. Because the Chiefs are one of the best teams in the NFL, which is proven by their Super Bowl appearance. So you're not going to go in and have an easy time against the Chiefs. And I don't think that the Browns were expecting to have an easy time, but the fact that people are losing their minds over the Browns losing, like, you need to chill out. Like, you really need to just, like, take a Xanax or something. I don't know. Have a cup of chamomile tea, whatever you do to calm yourself down. You know,
Something.
like, you meditate, take a few
Go run a
breaths,
marathon. I don't know. Like, do
touch
something.
grass.
I mean, it is. And so, can I just have to set the scene for you a minute because this is my first football season in a while with a baby in the house again. And I, you know, was a little bit distracted at times because obviously how could you not be? My older two are pretty good about, like, you know, they're doing their own thing while the Browns game are on. Like, they know, like, they get to have a little bit of extra iPad time or, like, play on the Nintendo a little bit more. And then they'll sometimes watch a little bit of the game. But babies are babies. They need attention.
Yes.
So bedtime is right around 7 p.m. for the baby. And you know that was, like, right in the midst of when the game was coming down to the final 5 minutes. And she was hungry. I was feeding her. She fell asleep, Meredith, in my arms. Literally, she was like 30 seconds in when Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney Patrick Mahomes. I literally, someone, I tweeted about this and someone responded to me with the meme of that, like, boy sitting in the classroom when the veins popping out of his
head.
I swear to you, that was me. I let out this guttural sound that I sounded like I was dying. I was like, She didn't move. So then I was like, all right, what's my next move here? Like, am I just going to, like, sit the rest of this game out with a baby in my arms? Or do I try to, like, aggressively sneak her into her room, into her crib, and get back down? So luckily, they went to commercial before the Browns got the ball back, and I was able to get her in her crib soundly and transfer that so that I could actually make noise at the end.
Oh, my God. So I don't know if she's at the age where you can do this, but my cousin's kid is probably the heaviest sleeper I've ever met. And it's because when he was a baby, she would make a point to do loud chores like vacuuming or like running the dishwasher, like those types of things after his bedtime. So she like trained him to be a heavy sleeper. And so when he's out, like, the world could end and it would not wake him up. So I don't know if baby is at the age where you can do those kinds of things or if she, you know, is able to handle the noisy chores, but I don't know. My cousin did that and it seemed to have worked.
You know, she does not like yelling and screaming. I think, like, in any other, like, she's fine if there's, like, noise, background noise. She sleeps with white noise in her room, so she does have, like, noise going, but yes, the screaming and the, like, abrupt, sudden movements, like, not a fan. Although I will say she was very captivated by, like, watching the game. Like, obviously, like, I didn't park her in front of the TV, but, like, it definitely grabs her attention. It must be the colors and the movement of the screen. But she kind of sat there and was like, I think I like football. Like, she was watching the Buckeyes game this weekend. So I'm like, hey, girl, you are welcome in this family for as long as you want if you are going to be a football fan.
Well, there you go. Football fan, hockey fan, sports fan, whatever you want.
Yeah, I think anything with color and movement. I mean, I guess if I put on Cocomelon, she'd probably like that too. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, Meredith, getting back to the game, was there any one moment that stuck out to you as, like, stinging the most or that hurt the Browns the most? I mean, obviously there were a few things that happened that, like, the obvious, the miffed punt, the Chubb fumble, the Baker interception.
So I would say the two, I'm going to put two moments out there that stung the most. The first one was, I think this to me is the most glaring, just because it's so out of character and so unexpected, was Nick Chubb fumbling. Because I don't know that he's ever done that, you know, and that is completely out of character for him. I don't know if it was the crowd noise that got to him or if it was like the heat and his hands were sweating, because it was like 90 degrees in Kansas City. So that one was really, really tough because that's so out of character for Nick Chubb. And I know he's taking that one hard after the game. And then I think the second moment that really stings is Baker's interception at the end of the game for a lot of reasons, because everyone's now saying, and they're not wrong, but I don't want to kick Baker while he's down for that interception, because he had such a great game prior to that. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, elite quarterbacks make the plays when the game is on the line. Yes. And, you know, they're not wrong. They're not wrong about that. And like I said, I don't want to kick Baker while he's down. But that's why that interception kind of hurt, because we want Baker to be that big quarterback in the moment that can make those plays and to keep his focus and And get the Browns to win a game, to come back like that. So that was a painful moment. And also, he's
That
got a
freaking sucked.
contract. Yeah, and he has a contract on the line. So, and he's waiting, the Browns are waiting. Like, there's obviously, like, everyone's expecting a deal to get done. Baker's not really talking about it that much, which is fine. He's not, he doesn't have to if he doesn't want to. But there's no way that's not on the back of his mind right now.
Yeah, for
Is
sure.
knowing that this is year four, and he does get a little bit of leeway because, year one was Hugh Jackson and year two was Freddie Kitchens. So I think he does get a little bit of wiggle room, but he's getting towards he's running out. Like, the hallways are getting narrower on him.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd like to have that one back. And you touched on two really big ones there. Both very obvious. For me, one of the things that stuck out to me quite a bit was two things that I think were huge momentum shifts. The Browns pretty much had their way with the offense for a majority of the football game. I mean, they almost looked like they could do whatever they wanted against that Chiefs defense, which was pretty incredible when you think about that. Especially, I was thinking about this today. When we played them in January, right? We pretty much trotted out the same offense, but this year, like this game on Sunday, we didn't have OBJ still, but you threw in Anthony Schwartz, which would not have had that. Like, I would not have had the amount of snaps that he got. He was a difference maker. I mean, his speed, that was something that I think we were missing last year. We had DPJ on the field and Higgins on the field quite a bit last year. They barely saw any playing time yesterday when it came to the offense.
Yeah,
Loved.
I think for our showdown fantasy, the one that we do weekly on DraftKings,
Yep.
I am so far down on the list, and because it's because I took Hollywood as one of my players, because I really thought that he was going to be out on the field,
Yeah. I had DPJ as my captain, Meredith. He scored 0 points and I still finished 11th.
How did you beat me? I was
Well,
like in like 150th or something.
because he was so cheap that I was able to afford Kelce, Mahomes, like I was able to afford like all of these like big players because he cost pennies.
I
So,
mean, that's actually a
but
really good
anyway,
strategy.
yeah, there you go. I mean,
You just
I
gave away
shouldn't
your
have given away my
strategy.
secrets. I had no idea that was going to happen that way. I thought DBJ was going to get like a lot more snaps with OBJ being out. But alas, I think the way that Kevin Stefanski and the offense approached this game plan, the use of the tight ends, the use of David Njoku, the way that they used Jarvis Landry, to me, that showed like how much this offense has actually evolved over last year. So I am excited, and we'll get more into the offense,
Oh,
but
I thought you were asking about what moments stung. That's why I picked
no,
out those two.
I'm sorry, I went off into a tangent, but for me, what stunk
Okay.
is that we had a three and out drive when we were in the entire game, like doing whatever we wanted. And then when we needed it the most, we stalled. And then I can't remember if that was right before or after the like one possession 75-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill, but it was almost as if you could feel the momentum shift and swing in that moment. And it was like, oh no, this is not good.
And I think what's really hard is the defense is definitely much improved, and there were so many things that happened on defense, like in the game this week, that would not have happened last year. But I think, and this is kind of jumping ahead in the rundown a little bit in why this game stung the most, is because it got to the point where we had to rely on the defense. Like, the Browns were up by two touchdowns, and it was like, all right, this is their game to lose at this point. Defense just has to hold them off. And when you're playing Kansas City, you can't rely on a defense to hold them down, unless you're Tampa Bay, apparently.
Yes.
But yeah, it was there was a lot there was a lot of pressure on the defense. There was, I think, too much on the defense. I think if the Browns were able to have scored one more time, then I think there's a very real possibility they would have come away with a win.
Yeah. I totally agree. And the defense, I think, is catching a lot of flack today. I mean, Travis Kelce, there's a reason he's one of the best players
He's
in the
annoyingly good.
National Football League. I
I
mean,
hate how good Travis Kelce is. It's so annoying.
you're not gonna stop him. Like, he's gonna get his touches. Same with Tyreek Hill. I mean, that is their game plan. Like, they're, and I had to keep reminding myself of this. Like, I was getting mad when they were completing these first rounds. I'm like, oh, that's so easy. And I'm like, okay, well, duh, it's easy because they have two of these dynamic playmakers on the field with one of the best quarterbacks in the football league. Like, they're going to get first downs. Like, they're not going to get stops. I actually think the defense, they were able to get off the field, which is something we could not do last year at yes. all. I mean, Jesus, Patrick Mahomes last year didn't even play most of the game and we still couldn't stop their offense.
I will say this. I think Woo. one of the other things that was really, like, I guess one of the things that stunk, and I tweeted about it as well, was the discipline on defense. Miles Garrett got yes. called twice yep. for offsides. Yep. And that is something that the defense did a lot last year. There was a lot of really dumb mental mistakes, things like offsides, like neutral zone infringement. I think maybe Denzel Ward, was it Denzel or Mac? One of them got an illegal shift thrown on them. Like, those were the types of, like, stupid mental errors that the defense made last year, and there were one too many of them in the game this year. So I don't know if that was the crowd noise that was getting to them. I think one of the offsides that Miles got called for, I think that was Patrick Mahomes drawing him offsides. Like, he did a great job of it. So
yeah,
it was tough. Like, those are the types of mistakes that you just cannot let happen. Like, they're basic fundamental mistakes. So that yeah, was probably, was first, yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. This was You're the fine. First game too that the defense played together
mm-hmm.
against the Chiefs.
Yes.
Like, man, but Miles, when you want to talk about tough, that's tough.
Yes, but Miles did get a sack, which I was very happy about. And Jadeveon yes. did break up a very big play early in the game. So, yep. oh my God, yep. that play that Jadeveon broke up, my heart fluttered.
That was amazing.
I forget who said it. I don't know if I heard it in real life by someone in the bar or whether it was just on Twitter, but someone said the comment of, that's why you paid Jadeveon. And I was like, yes, like Titans yeah. fans. You know, we're kind of like, oh, get him off our hands. But they're like, okay, we'll gladly take Jadeveon Clowney. Like, you know, A, he was injured, and B, you didn't use him correctly. Give him to us. We know what to do with him. Or at least I hope we know yeah. what to do with him. But yeah, like I was very, very happy with the way Jadeveon Clowney played yesterday.
I think we should get into the positives because we're yes. bleeding into them.
Yes, you guys let's know, do it.
We are a positive show. We like to, I guess, for nothing else, latch onto the positive when there yeah, are things that are disappointing.
even when we're talking about the negatives, we're like focusing on the positives because
yes.
this team is so easy to be positive about. You know, we did, even when we were doing this show during the Freddie Kitchens era, we tried. It started to get thin after a while, but we really tried.
It was really tough.
I kind of wonder what we would have sounded like if we managed to get this started during the 0-16 season. That would have been a trip.
Yeah.
I feel like we would have just been we may have just been getting drunk every episode. Who knows?
There you go. Yes. Agreed. And I do want to tell everyone, we are not running moral victory laps. Okay. Because that's the other thing. No. Everyone's mad about the moral victories, but listen, these are just facts. Like these are facts. What we're going to talk about, the offense. Mm-hmm. We talked about this on our podcast last week. We wanted to see the offense picked up right where we left off. Guess what? It got even better. We just talked about a few things that we saw that we loved. The first three drives of the Browns' possessions resulted in touchdowns. That's right, touchdowns. We don't need no field goals. We don't need a field goal kicker. Sorry, Meredith. I know you love kickers. I don't know if we need one this year.
I don't think it's that I love kickers. I just think that I like Cody Parkey.
Cody Parkey. All right, Cody Parkey.
Because I think what it really is that I love seeing redemption arcs, and Cody Parkey yes. was starting to get that last year, especially with the way he played in the playoffs for the Browns last year. And this year could have been his year, and then he got injured. So, yeah, let's just drop all of our kickers, and we'll just
there you go
for it on fourth every single time.
We'll need that roster spot. It's fine.
Go for a two-point conversion every single time. Someone remind Jamie Gillen that sometimes rugby rules apply. And yes. if you miss the snap, you can still kick it. You don't have yes. to try and run for it, you big lug.
Yeah. So, but right now, the Browns offense ranks number one in the NFL. I just want to repeat that again. The Browns offense ranks number one in the NFL. And yes, we still have a loss. I know. But right now, and I know the Ravens game is still going on, but the Browns are averaging the highest yards per play at 8.2. So that is something that we should be excited about, you guys. This offense has actually gotten better. And I think we had a pretty good offense last year, but we also were saying this without having OBJ on the field. So let's keep going. Baker
Mayfield. Yeah, and there were like Anthony Schwartz did so well yesterday. Like that was
great.
He made a few key catches. There were a few times where he dropped the ball, and you know, if that was OBJ in that position, that's a ball that would have been caught. So this offense can only go up from here. Agreed. I want to talk about OBJ for a really quick second.
Yeah.
Because having him on the inactive list yesterday was a little bit of a shock. And after the game, Jarvis was talking about the mental game, and Kevin Stefanski even said, you know, when he's ready to play, he's going to play. If he's not ready, he's not going to play. And I was shocked, sad, surprised, all of that at the time that they announced the inactives yesterday. But then this morning I was thinking about it, because literally like my whole life is football and sports. It's what I do for fun. It's what I do for work. Like it's all I ever do. So I was thinking about it this morning after I had a chance to sleep on it. And I realized that the Browns are playing the long game. And especially with the way Jarvis was talking about OBJ's mental state. And because, you know, if you make a mental error, that can result in a physical injury. Yes. So I'm sitting there thinking, what is more important, having OBJ week one or having a healthy OBJ in the playoffs? And that's why I was thinking about it this morning and thinking, you know what? I'm not mad that OBJ didn't play yesterday, because I think Kevin Stefanski is looking at this and saying, we need a healthy OBJ beyond week 17.
Yes.
And the way they're going to do that is, you know, if he isn't confident.
He's not active for week one.
Yeah. If he's not confident in himself, if the coaches don't like what they're seeing, you know, before the game, then you know what? They are playing the long game. They are playing chess. They are playing, you know, they're thinking about the cones. This is Cones of Dunshire over here. So I woke up this morning and I was like, I'm not upset that OBJ didn't play, because they are more, it tells me that the Browns are more worried about having a healthy OBJ in the postseason than trotting him out week one so everyone can see what he's capable of doing. So that's my piece on OBJ.
I'm actually really glad you brought that up though, Meredith, because it's a really important tidbit that I think we need to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. We need to have the foresight to understand that this is bigger than one game. And we as fans do not have that. And I want to go back to something that happened during the final roster, because a lot of people were upset that Kadarrell Hodge didn't make the team, right? Mm-hmm. He is not on the Cleveland Browns football team. Did we miss him yesterday? No. We didn't miss him. I wasn't sitting there saying, oh man, if we would have had Kadarrell Hodge on this football team, that would have made a huge difference. No, because I think this coaching staff, the front office, every single move they make is well thought out. It is calculated. It is long term. The decision about OBJ yesterday, too short, disappointed. I really wanted to see him out there back on the field. It would have been amazing. I wanted him to go off against Kansas City. But I am with you. I would rather have him active later on in the season than Sunday. I'm sorry, but like that game, yeah, it would have been great to win. It's not going to make or break our season. It should not. It should not define how the rest of this season is going to go. And I think they made a smart move. And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Honestly, I think too, they probably had a feeling earlier on in the week that he wasn't going to be out there, and they still game planned for that and executed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, what's more important, a week one win or an AFC championship win?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, but I do think that this team has the potential, based on what we saw yesterday, to go far. And we have to remember, like, we can't, this is one loss. It's one loss, you guys. Losing against the Chiefs doesn't count for five losses. It's still one loss. Like, move on. Move on.
I know. And I'm going to use a phrase that I used at the beginning of the podcast, because it's one of my favorite turns of phrase of all time. It's seeing the forest for the trees.
Yes.
And what that means is seeing the big picture. Yeah, because sometimes people get so caught up in the minutia and the details. And that's why, you know, different personality types work together so well. Like I work some like I work really well in both environments, but like I know for some radio shows that I have done, like the big picture is really, really important. And I'm too, like for me personally, I get too bogged down in the details because I have to be. And so I have someone next to me who's looking at the big picture. And like, that's how things become successful. And that's kind of what the Browns are doing. They are looking at the big picture, looking at the season as a whole. And it's not necessarily counting your chickens before they're hatched, but it is, you know, game planning, assuming that the Browns are going to play more than 17 games this year,
yes.
You know, preseason excluded. So, yeah, I just, at the time it was upsetting, but after I slept on it, I was like, this team knows what they're doing. Again, they're thinking 10 steps ahead of everything. And it was the same thing with the game in and of itself. Like, don't be prisoner of the moment. Like, don't get caught up in a Baker interception and only think about this Baker interception, and know that when you compare Baker stats to Mahomes' stats yesterday, they were almost right in line with each other. Like, they, like Mahomes, yeah, and Baker were very, very evenly matched or evenly statted, whatever you want to, however you want. Like, in terms of the stats, they were very even keel with each other. So, yes, you know, yeah.
Was Let's the talk about Baker.
Yeah. Baker'd. Was the interception a bad thing? Yeah, it was, but he had a phenomenal game leading up to that.
So, he had, yes, an amazing game. I mean, he finished 21 for 28, 321 yards, zero touchdowns, one interception, 97.5 rating. The frustrating thing about this is people are only going to pay attention to that interception, right? It's the blemish. The blemish on, mm-hmm, his game yesterday, that highlight was going to be played over and over and over again because he had the ball in his hands with 5 minutes left to go, couldn't finish the game. And unfortunately, with Baker, this has happened time and time again to quote-unquote good teams against good, mm-hmm, teams, right? That is the, yeah, narrative surrounding Baker Mayfield as to why he isn't a franchise quarterback. The naysayers will say that he can't close out good teams. Now, we as Baker supporters know that's not true. Clearly, he closed out the Steelers two times in a row last year, but, mm-hmm, people will find any reason to slam Baker Mayfield, even Browns fans alike. They do not want this guy to be our franchise quarterback. I wanted him so badly, Meredith, to march down the field and close out that game. But you know what?
Me too.
Things happen. That didn't make me lose faith in him because he executed the game plan damn near perfectly. I mean, yeah, and he played great.
Yeah, and with the way he threw that last ball, it did look like he was trying to throw it out, but I think he just got pressured a little too, yeah, much. And I think, yeah, that's
and
why.
And he made a mistake.
Going,
you know,
yeah,
I think he was a little bit indecisive in what he wanted to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was, and also, he can't be half pregnant.
Yeah. And also it was because it was the end of the game with the game on the line, you know, a touchdown would have won the game and it was the very last play of the game. I think it was just that the reason why people are so focused on that one singular play is because if that interception happened, say, sometime in the first half, but the Browns were still up by two touchdowns going into halftime, like, I don't think that people would be so obsessive about a Baker interception. But because it was the last drive of the,
yep,
of the game,
exactly,
for the Browns, because it was a potential game-winning drive and, you know, the few other things surrounding it, it just, I think that's the reason why people are so latched onto it, which, yes, is why I'm, again, saying, like, look at the big picture, look at the game as a whole, look at Baker's stats for the whole game and compare them to Patrick Mahomes' stats and realize that he was right in lockstep with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for that game.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
You know,
I mean, Baker was part of the reason we were in the game.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
like,
exactly.
Once again, really big reason as to why we were even in the game. Sticking with the offense, so the offensive line, I mean, come on, they remained the best in the league. That was pretty clear watching them play. I mean,
yes,
they are amazing. Fantastic. I mean, obviously, Jedrick Wills going down pretty early on was tough to see. Not dissimilar to what happened last year with Jed going,
yeah,
down.
And I want to tell a story that happened yesterday during the game at our watch party. You know, when Jed Wills went down, obviously we were all upset, but, you know, very good friend of the show, Damon, he stood up and he held up his arms. He's like, guys, we've got Chris Hubbard. And just like the way he said it was just, it was so funny.
The offensive line whisper.
Yes, exactly. Because it was just one of those things where he was just like, hey, like, yes, we lost our left tackle, but the guy behind him
it's fine.
Is just as good. Like, we've got, not only do we have the best offensive line in the NFL, this line also has depth. So just the way he kind of, you know that scene from the new Jurassic Park with Chris Pratt and he's like holding off the raptors? Like, that's kind of what Damon looked like when he was like, guys, guys, we got Chris
Hubbard.
We'll
be fine. It's fine. but I mean, it's true when you have a coach like Bill Callahan, you don't really have to worry about it. It's like next man up, and like you're gonna trust that they're gonna fit in with the scheme and know what they're doing. And I mean, my goodness, they didn't really miss a step.
Right. And Wyatt Teller,
I mean, they did
like
give up one really bad sack, but
yeah,
but
yeah,
all in all, it was a pretty clean game.
He had one crappy penalty, and I was just like, oh no, Wyatt, baby, what is you doing? but overall, like, I think those things are going to get fixed. I don't expect those ticky-tacky penalties to come the Browns' way anymore. So, first game jitters, they got it all out. It's fine. We're good. Wonderful. Okay. I'm still going to remind everyone at every moment, as every chance I get, that Wyatt Teller is a Hokie. And also, there's another offensive lineman. I don't know if he's entering the draft this year or next year. I'm not quite sure when he's eligible, but his name is Brock Hoffman. Remember that name, because I have a feeling.
Okay.
I have a feeling he's going to be the next Wyatt Teller.
There you go. Heard it here first.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. So whatever team he gets drafted to, if he suddenly shoots up the rankings in the Pro Football Focus arena, don't be surprised.
Well, we'll close out the offense with David Njoku. I mean, Meredith.
Oh, Njoku. It is Njoku season,
he looked like
baby.
A demigod. I mean, he looked like, what's his face from Moana? Like, there was that one pass he caught and the defender, like,
Maui.
Leaped on him. And David Njoku just, like, galloped, like, down the field. Like, it was nothing. Like, he didn't have man hanging off of him.
Do you think he was singing the You're Welcome song afterwards?
I think so. My husband was like,
you're welcome.
He was like, that man is hanging off of him and he's just running like there's nothing attached to him. I was like, I know. I want to see more
so
of that.
Right.
He led the team with receptions. 76
and I feel like
yards.
I feel like we need to give Brittany credit for that, because I feel like she's the one who keeps saying it's going to be Njoku's year. Right?
She was one who it was me. I was saying how I drafted him like every year in fantasy. And then the one year I didn't will be his breakout year. So I'm waiting for
there
that to
go.
Happen. But it's fine. I will listen. I will trade that off like all the time. It's fine.
Yeah. So when we were on a show that I was on like 2 weeks ago, they kind of put me in the spot with predictions for, you know, AFC, NFC, Super Bowl, all that stuff. And I think I picked the Browns to go to the Super Bowl, but I picked them to lose. And I got kind of this look and I was like, listen, I am notoriously terrible at predicting things. So if I was like, I don't want to like have this guilt of saying, you know, Super Bowl, Super Browns, and then have it not happen. So I was like, if I predict them to either not make it to the Super Bowl or make it and not win, I'm always wrong when it comes to predictions. So like, let's just hope that I'm like happily being proven wrong. Now, like when it comes to actual game analysis, I like to think that I'm right more than I'm wrong. But when it comes to like, who's going to win this weekend? What's the score going to be? Although I did predict that for this game, the Chiefs it was going to be a close game, and that I think I had the Chiefs winning by 3. So I wasn't that far off. But I did have the game a lot low. Like, it was much lower scoring in my prediction than it was in reality. But still, just when it comes to predicting outcomes of things, I'm not good. That's why I don't play the lottery.
Yeah, I was gonna say, most of us are bad at that, right? Or we'd all be millionaires.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's move into some more positives. We'll go to the defense, which I know this was controversial, but I did just want to bring up again, they made stops when they counted. And I wanted to read this because I was on Twitter a little bit today, and I was just trying to keep some positive things out there. And Nathan Zagura responded to, I guess, maybe a troll out there that the defense didn't look any better. And per him, the Browns pressured Mahomes 44% of his dropbacks, which was the fifth highest in the NFL on Mahomes. Against that, Mahomes was actually 8-for-13, 185 yards and a touchdown. I mean, this just proves, Meredith, Mahomes is that good, because I would, the game with a naked eye, I never would have thought that Mahomes was ever under pressure. Like, that's just how good he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this defense,
and then,
this, defense is so much improved from last
year.
Yeah,
I mean, we had the ability to actually get them off the field, and they scored field goals twice, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, last year, I don't know if they punted the ball at all, and I don't know if they actually – did they score field goals last year? I can't remember, but, I mean,
I don't
come
know.
On. We know that they let Chad Henne run 14 yards on them to get a first down. We couldn't stop Chad Henne last year.
Yeah. Oh, that was another really bad take I saw today. Someone was blaming Baker Mayfield for that Chad Henne 14-yard run, and I'm like, Baker Mayfield wasn't even on the field when that happened. Because someone was trying to argue that.
I really can't with the stupidity.
Oh, gosh. I know. Some of the calls. So let's go back to the positives. That's just like, because before we started recording, I was telling Bree some of the worst takes that I heard today. And I was like, there was one that was so heinous, and I like couldn't recall it. And when you mentioned Chad Henne, that's what sparked it. Because that's what the person was blaming, like saying why Baker doesn't deserve a contract. He's not a good quarterback, blah, blah, blah. Like, because like they're talking about last year, which is fine, but you have to remember the Browns have moved on to this year. And so we need to do the same. And also, like, you cannot blame Baker Mayfield for Chad Henne pulling off a 14-yard run because Baker Mayfield wasn't even on the field. He wasn't even on the field when that happened. So
everything's his fault.
Right, right. But this defense looked so much better. Jadeveon Clowney, I mentioned it earlier, he broke up a play. Myles Garrett got a sack. Outside of a few of those discipline penalties, like the offsides and the illegal shifts, that looked like a really solid defense, and they're only going to get better.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you should write down all of these things. Like, write down all of these ridiculous takes, and I think we should revisit them at the end of the season. I think that would be really fun. So
yeah,
I think you need to keep a list, a running list.
Oh, gosh.
Google Docs.
Yeah.
Well, we can have a really good laugh, or we could have a really good cry later on. I mean, it just depends on how the season goes. But I think you should do it. I'm feeling positive.
Yeah, me too. Just, like, I just don't know why fans get so down on this team so much. Like, I understand, you know, there's been a lot of misery, like, since the team came back in 99, there hasn't been a lot of success. There was, you know, one flash in the pan year in, what was it, 2007? And ever since then, it's just been misery. But, like, you have to get out of that mindset. Like, you can't be in that mindset of lamenting bad things that happen every single week, because the reality is that very few teams play flawless games every single week. And the Browns are not going to play flawlessly every single week. But, you know, with the discipline that Kevin Stefanski has, I don't expect to see these same types of mistakes coming up week after week. So just, fans, get yourselves together. Just get it. Just get it together.
Pull it together. Pull it together.
Do some yoga.
More games left. We're going to be okay. Okay, so let's
wrap
up
with classes with some goats. They do yoga classes with goats. Go to a cat cafe. I don't know. I'm going to come up. That's what I'm just going to do every single week, is I'm going to come up with the most ridiculous, relaxing suggestions for people every week. Because even if the Browns play like a flawless game and Baker throws for 30 touchdowns in a single game and OBJ and Nick Chubb get 1,000-yard games in a single game and the Browns win by 150, there's still going to be somebody who's coming in trying to say that Baker doesn't deserve a contract. I think I heard a bad take of, why are we paying OBJ if he's sitting? Another one about wasting money on Jadeveon Clowney, and then Clowney breaks up a play. So it's like, all right, I'm done. I just, like, the bad takes get to me. They really do, because sometimes I can't escape them, and they get under my skin. They get under my skin a lot, because this is just a really exciting team, and people need to stop either fabricating problems or blowing things out of proportion, which is, I think, a lot of what's happening today. Like, overall, the Browns played very, very well yesterday. And even when you were looking at things with the naked eye, you could tell that this was a much improved team from last year. And if that's the way they play against one of the best teams in football, it's going to be a really exciting year.
Yes, agreed. All right, two more things to touch on before we get into a couple of concerns.
I know, I've been railroading with my monologues because something sets me off. And then
no,
I
it's okay. We kind of touched on this already, but I was pretty pleased with the rookie play coming out of mm-hmm. Sunday's game, especially when you look at the matchup that they had to face. So we talked about Anthony Schwartz and the impact that he made. You know, I think we all thought that he was going to be in for like maybe a play or two, like a couple of trick plays. But man, that guy is fast and he is going to be good. I mean, even on the routes that he's running, there's a really good chance that he can just draw pass interference because he's that fast. And I thought that that's maybe what would happen on that one play where he couldn't quite hang onto the ball. But that the defender made a really good play on that. But I do think he has the potential to turn into a pretty solid receiver for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to, you know, work on his hands a little bit, which they knew was a concern.
Yep.
Of him coming out of Auburn. That was a concern in training camp of him dropping passes. But he did make two very crucial catches yesterday, which says he has been working on his hands. So he's got a bright future. And anytime he like took off on the field, I got this picture of like the Roadrunner in my head. I just like if I could run as fast as Anthony Schwartz 100% every single time I sprinted, I would go meet me. Every time.
I love that. I love the Roadrunner. He was my favorite Looney Tune.
I don't know if he was Looney Tunes, but he was one of my favorite cartoons. But yeah, that's all I'm going to picture. Because like, if I could run as fast as Anthony Schwartz, I'm going meep meep the whole time.
Yep.
The entire time.
Exactly. Exactly. And then on the opposite side of the ball, Meredith, Malik McDowell. So this guy, when you talk about a comeback story, right? He mm-hmm. had the highest rated defensive. He was the highest rated defensive player on the field on Sunday. Does that surprise you?
Not with the way he played. No, I mean,
I know he is a unit.
Yeah, like if you had told me before the game that he would be the highest rated defensive player on the field, I'd probably think you were crazy. But after seeing the way he played, oh my goodness, like he is going to give some of those other guys on the defense a run for their money, because we've got some talent on the defense, and Malik McDowell is just, he is going to push them to be better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to see how he progresses throughout the rest of this season. And you know, I'm excited to see him against some of maybe less mobile quarterbacks. I mean, I want him to wreck Ben Roethlisberger.
Sorry. Oh, we all do. So speaking of the defense, just a very small tangent and then we can move on. So we know how high I was on Troy Hill yes. coming into this team, both him and John Johnson, but like especially Troy Hill. I had to remind myself Troy Hill now wears number 23, because at one point I was seeing 23.
Oh no.
And I was like, I was having Sindeo PTSD.
I know.
So I was like, I had to remind myself, I was like, no, Troy Hill's in 23 this year. We're good. Like, if you see 2-3 on the field, you're okay.
Man, we didn't even talk about the Ronnie Harrison situation. That was something else. Like, we didn't even have our starting safety on the field most of the game.
Yeah, that Ronnie Harrison situation is a frustrating one. That was very frustrating.
And I don't know if you happened to listen to the broadcast during that moment, but Tony Romo was, like, adamant that Ronnie Harrison was... he was in the wrong. I mean, it was so one-sided. And I was like, wait a minute. It did not look like he meant to step on the player on the ground. Like, it looked like he got pushed into the player and was trying to get off. And then he got pushed back into him. I mean,
which is exactly what happened. So someone pointed out today, one of my colleagues, and he's very, very right about the situation. Because I know some people were talking about thinking that assistant coach with the Chiefs should be suspended or fined. And I know Kevin Stefanski was asked about it today and he had the best answer possible, which was, I'm worried about my guys on my team. It's exactly the answer that you need out of Kevin Stefanski. But one of my colleagues pointed out that if there's some kind of discipline that comes down for that coach on the Kansas City side, that also means a similar or worse discipline is going to come down for Ronnie Harrison. So if you get a suspension from the Kansas City Chiefs coach, then that means that Ronnie Harrison is going to get suspended. So like, I hope that the coach gets fined, because that's not okay. But after my colleague kind of pointed out, like, this is the way the NFL operates, I'm like, yeah, you're right. So for people who are calling for his suspension, it just, I think the Browns got lucky or are lucky if he doesn't get suspended, because that means that Ronnie Harrison will be back in the very next game. Like, the fact that he got ejected and there was no discipline at the time for the assistant coach or wide receivers coach or linebackers coach or whoever it was, that was kind of heinous. But I mean, we saw that last year with that hit on Hollywood Higgins. Like, stuff like that happens. So I think that was just one of those moments that was very angering and frustrating, but I think that is
Yes.
also a moment that we just need to forget moving forward, because we're going to get Ronnie Harrison back on the field next week. He's going to make a difference, and we just have to accept that there's probably, like, outside of Ronnie Harrison getting ejected and people talking about it today, I don't think anything's going to come of it. And so I think, honestly, fans need to drop it. And, as far as I can tell, the Browns are already focusing on next week, as they should.
Yes, I
So,
agree.
yeah.
I agree. And I wanted to end the positive notes with Stefanski. I
Ooh,
mean, can we just talk
Stefanski.
about his ability to scheme and call a game? He was incredible yesterday with the opening drive and beyond the first half. I mean, he's scary because he's silent.
Silent but
He's like a
deadly.
silent
Wait.
assassin. Yes, silent but deadly.
Wait.
That's like, he's like a fart. It's fine.
He's
He's
a
a fart.
fart.
So we're, I mean, that's like the kind you gotta look out for, right?
I'll tell you what, though. I was so happy to see not one but two trick plays. That's like one of my favorite things that Kevin Stefanski does. And I wasn't sure that we were actually going to see one of those banana plays. Like, I know that Jarvis didn't get a chance to, toss the ball 80 yards down the field like he wanted to. You knew he was looking for it, but he
Yes.
didn't have the opening. I wasn't sure that Stefanski was going to call that banana play against Kansas City because of how good that team is. But the fact that he called two trick plays, one of them, even though it wasn't, I'm sure that play was Jarvis throwing it down the field, but they still got a few yards on that play with Jarvis throwing the ball. And then that flea flicker trick play at the end of the second half, Kareem Hunt was so close to the end zone. Like, he was almost there. And that was so much fun and so
Oh, I
exciting. And
know.
even though it didn't end in a touchdown, it was still a well-executed play. It just, Kareem Hunt just got stuffed by like five defenders at the very end. But that was so much fun. I love these trick plays so much, Brie. I love them. They're so much fun to watch. And I especially love them because Kevin Stefanski is not going to call them if he doesn't think they're going to work.
Yeah, that play leading into halftime was amazing. I thought we were gonna score too. Like I agree. I thought we were gonna get tackled immediately, and I was like, oh my gosh, like we may actually score a touchdown. Like
I
this is
know, it's like
insane.
we're still alive. My throat is still sore from that moment, because I screamed so hard. Like, I was so excited. Yeah, that would have been, honestly, I think if Kareem Hunt was able to find the end zone, or at least get the ball to somebody who got there, I think the Browns probably would have won. But I will say, and I know we're talking about the positives, but the Chiefs were they very clearly adjusted at halftime, and they came out
Yes.
looking like a completely different team in the third quarter. But even so, you expected that from them. But yeah, but with the way Kevin Stefanski called plays yesterday, it was just, because I've heard from multiple coaches, former coaches, like people who have been in his position before, that it is so difficult to both manage the game and call plays,
Yeah.
and Kevin Stefanski is doing it, and he's making it look easy.
Yeah, he really is. And I mean, even just his decision making, like the 2-point conversion when Kansas City got that penalty against them, like knowing when to use his timeout going into halftime to get that playoff. I mean, I just felt like he's hard on himself, obviously, as he should be. And that's fine. Like that's the example that he's leading for his team, that they didn't play good enough. He didn't coach good enough. I'm fine with that. Like this mentality that he takes on, this is someone that you want long term. I mean, he
Yes.
says the right things, he does the right things, he's not all talk. I mean, he is so even keeled. I don't know how he holds it together, quite frankly.
I mean, he's not all talk because he doesn't really talk much at all. Like, I mean,
Yeah,
when
I mean, that's
he,
the thing.
And when
like, he's
yeah.
just, but he has to talk. He talks without
he
saying
does.
things.
He
It's incredible.
he
It, that,
talks.
that's a gift.
It really is. And we used to do this fun game when I worked in college sports where one of our analysts would do, we would call it the coach speak translator. And so like anytime we had a press conference and it was a coach saying a lot of things without saying anything at all, we would have him translate what the coach actually meant. But I feel like Kevin Stefanski is so good with his words that the coach speak translator would just be white noise. Like, because he says what he intends to say and what he wants to say, nothing more, nothing less. And he does an incredible job of getting the exact message across that he intends to get across the first time. Because anytime someone says something and then they kind of get killed for it and they're like, well, I have to clarify my earlier statement or going back on what I said before, you like, that never happens with Kevin Stefanski. He gets the exact message across that he wants to get across the first time. He never has to go back and clarify anything. And just the man has a gift. He has a gift for coaching, he has a gift for play calling, and he has a gift for his the way he presents himself to the public. Just I cannot say enough good things about that man. Like the Browns are so lucky to have Stefanski.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Okay, so I want to move on to biggest concerns coming out of the game, and then we will get you guys out of here. So Meredith, I think there's two things that I don't think we need to hit the panic button yet, but I think this is just something to watch for as the season continues because I think we feel pretty confident in the other areas, or at least we're on our way to feeling confident when it comes to the defense. The one piece that's still a bit of a head scratcher is the linebacker play. Glaringly the lowest rated group on the team. People have consistently been hard on this core. Mac Wilson obviously gets a lot of criticism, in some cases, rightfully so, in some other cases, probably not as fair. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, obviously the rookie out of Notre Dame. I believe we all expected him to have a pretty big impact. I do have hope that Jeremiah will see more of the football field. Probably not the best to measure what he could be against the Kansas City Chiefs. But something I think to keep our eyes on as we go through the next couple of games.
For sure. I just there are a few things on defense that will hopefully be corrected moving forward. So a little bit of concerns on defense, and you touched on it with linebackers, but I just had a really long sigh. I don't know if the mic picked that up, but
You did. It's fine. It
I
deserves a
did.
sigh.
Yeah, because I still worry a little bit about the defense. There were a few people who were very mad at Joe Woods this morning, which I get, but again, I don't want to hit the panic button on week one because I feel like people kind of did that last year with the Ravens and look what happened
Yes.
as the season went on. So
Yes.
am I concerned about the defense? A little bit. Am I concerned about Joe Woods? A little bit, but I'm not hitting the panic button yet.
I mean, this was a big test. We didn't pass it. I think in some cases the defense did, but I think there were too many things that went wrong that it was hard to say that the defense was 100% at fault there. I think there were a lot of mistakes that were made. You clean up those mistakes, and I think you're not really talking about the defense all that much. Like, you're not talking
Exactly.
about the poor linebacker play.
Right.
And then finally, special teams, Meredith. Like, do
There's
we
my other
have a good
sigh.
special teams unit?
I
I
don't
thought we
know.
did. I thought we
I don't
did. Like in
know.
2019, that was the best thing on our team. And now I'm like,
I don't know.
what happened?
I don't know. I just,
I don't know either.
I don't know.
I again, and like, listen, you don't want the game to come down to your special teams losing it for you.
Right? That's the last people that should be losing it for you. One of my friends
Yes.
tweeted out, one of my friends called Jamie Gillen Scottish Butterfingers.
Oh no.
Oh gosh. And a lot of people were bringing up the fact that he has a rugby background and they're like, okay, like, yeah, he lost the ball for a second, but he got it back. Why didn't he still just kick it? And that's another thing I don't understand
Right, and if you're a
'cause he
rugby
could
player, go run
have.
someone over. Like, aren't you used to running someone
Right?
over without pads
Right.
on? Like, come on, like kick
So,
someone. I don't know.
yeah,
Oh,
I don't
Jamie.
know what do not know what was going on with Jamie Gillen yesterday on Sunday.
The Scottish hammer turned into the Scottish, he was like the Scottish screwdriver. Just. He just screwed up.
I mean, I have a feeling that so outside of Anthony Schwartz needing some time with the jug machine, you know, the little like whoop that throws the ball and you catch it. Like I think that now Nick Chubb and Jamie Gillen need to go spend some time with the jugs too. Like the three of them, like instead of getting to the together and going to Montana, they should get together and hang out with the jug machine and just do the Michael Jordan thing. Don't, you know, how he wouldn't leave until he made 100 free throws. Like, don't leave until you catch 100 balls
Yes.
each.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I
Fine
know
with
that
that.
Nick Chubb doesn't really need to catch it as much, but I know that he's, you know, not happy about the one fumble from yesterday. So maybe he doesn't need time with the jugs, but maybe he does. Maybe he wants to just to show moral support to to
He
Jamie
just needs to
Gillen.
carry on a football every day in his life and not let it go. Like, he has to do
Yeah,
everything carrying a
exactly.
football in his hand. He has to eat. He has to go to the bathroom that way. He has to, like, he should just carry a football
Shower.
around. Yes. And
He's
not drop
like in
it.
the yeah, he's in the shower. Yeah, with the soap.
Exactly.
And
Put him to the
trying to get
test.
clean. Trying to get clean and hang on to the football. If you're
Yes.
sleeping, cuddle with your football. Don't let it go.
Yes. I love it. Well, okay, so there is one thing I want to mention. I'm sorry. We will end the show after this. I didn't really put a segment in here for Rival Reddit, but I did have to just touch on one thing about our Rival Reddit boards. And I'm not like having this segment in here to like troll the Rival fans. I just think it's interesting to see what is being talked about in other fan bases because we obviously spent a good portion of our show talking about how our fans right now are going crazy after one game. We're seeing this own thing in our own fan base. It's kind of fun to see what other fan bases like get in a fuss about. So I just want to preface it with that. But one of the things I did notice in both of our rivals boards, which the Steelers and the Ravens specifically, is they both had specific posts talking about our loss.
Multiple
Like
posts. Like the Steelers
multiple
Reddit,
posts.
I think in Steelers Reddit, I saw at least two unique posts about the Browns loss. And then I went into a few of the threads, and like every fifth comment on some of the posts were about the Browns. And I just find it so funny because I might tweet something alluding, and because this ha had happened to me multiple times, and I know it happens to, at least I see it among other women. I don't know if this happens as much to men, but I forget what I tweeted, and this was during the off season, something alluding to the Steelers loss, and then some Steelers fan responds rent free, and it's not somebody that I follow, it's not somebody that anybody that I follow follows, and this was a tweet of mine that didn't really get a lot of traction, so it wasn't getting retweets, it wasn't really getting likes, which is fine. Like I'm not tweeting for interaction, like I don't care. I'm tweeting to talk to myself, and if people respond, cool, but. Yeah, this was just, it was a very low interaction tweet, and a Steelers fan responds rent free. And I was like, you had to have searched specific key terms, like keywords, in order to come across my tweet and then to respond just rent free. So I'm like, who is living who in whose head rent free if you are seeking out people talking about the Steelers, and he had to have clicked on my profile too, because just looking at my display name, my handle, and my picture, you cannot tell that I'm a Browns fan unless you go to my profile and see it where I have it in my profile. So not only did this guy have to search these keywords, he had to have clicked on my profile to read my profile to see that I'm associated with the Browns. So yeah, and then you go to, and this was something that happened months ago, and then you go into the Reddit boards and you see unique posts about the Browns, and then you go into posts that are about the Steelers and people are talking about the Browns. And I was like, I just like it's projection. Like they are constantly projecting, oh, we live in your heads rent-free. Like, no, you guys are always the ones in our mentions. You're always up in our mentions.
Always,
Like your
always. And
Reddit boards are all about the Browns. Like, you fucking won your game yesterday. Excuse my language, but you won your game yesterday. Why are you talking about the Browns?
Yeah, I'm going to say this and then I'll leave it at this. It all stems from insecurity. That is the reason. Like, I actually think that they're scared to face us, and they should be. I truly feel like this is, I mean, I watched the Steelers in the Buffalo game before and it was boring and there wasn't anything that worried me. Your smokescreen defense. Sure, your defense is fine. That's fine. I actually have more faith in the Browns offense to go and beat you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to waste time talking about the Steelers because I'm not worried. I'm not worried about them. I'm not worried about their fans. But go ahead and keep talking about us because I think they saw what they're going to have to face.
They're such a weird fan base. But I will say this. One of my favorite things to do if I'm ever on a road trip. And I mean, at this point, it's not as much because of travel, but like, or because of, you know, world events. You know, I'm not really driving to places as much, but I love tuning in to local sports radio when I'm driving. I know when I'm driving back home to DC, I'll turn on the sports station in Pittsburgh as I'm driving through Pittsburgh, and like I'll put on 105.7 in Baltimore as I'm driving through Baltimore. Like I love listening to those other stations, and you know, with radio stations streaming on the internet now, like you have access to every market. And I listen to podcasts from other teams and other markets. Like I love hearing what they have to say. I love hearing their point of view. You know, and I love hearing what their storylines are, and Steelers included. Like I love listening to Pittsburgh sports radio sometimes, but just I'm not going on Browns Reddit boards and posting about the Steelers. Like, so yeah. Like, that's it. So yes. Yeah, Rival Reddit was an interesting place this week. And that's actually how I wound up on Browns Reddit, because I went to Steelers Reddit first and I saw all these posts on the Browns and all these comments on the Browns. And I was like, well, I wonder what our people are saying. And so I go to Browns Reddit and it's, you know, people are posting highlights. People are, you know, talking about Kevin Stefanski. People are talking about the game. You know, I'm sure there were a few negative posts, but overall, Browns Reddit was great. So, yeah.
Well, I agree. Meredith, that wraps us up for this evening. It was obviously not a Victory Monday show for us, but I have a feeling we'll have some of those in our near future. We thank everyone for listening, for showing up to our pregame event, hoping we can put one of those on again next time. But thank you guys all everyone who showed up and made that special. We thank you guys for listening. Let us know your feedback. As always, you can find us on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll talk to you guys very, very soon.